Welcome to the Fangled Cast, brought to you by Fangled Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Fangled Cast. Today, I've got a new friend, Sejal Thacker from Train Extra. And as usual, rather than me screwing up the bio and sounding like a robot, I'm going to let my new friend, Sejal, introduce herself and tell us a little bit about her company.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say thank you for having me as a guest. I really appreciated you watching my talk and kind words you gave me and then inviting me here to talk about it. Thank you so much. I'm humbled. What can I tell you about myself? My number one priority right now is I gave myself this title called Master Juggler because I'm homeschooling. I'm running my own business. And then I recently accepted a role with the startup as their chief culture officer. So I've got a lot on my plate. I'll start off by telling you about my number one priority, which is my son. So I have an 8-year-old son. My focus is being here for him this last year, homeschooling and so forth. My second full-time job is owning my own company called Train Extra. Mm-hmm. And there I'm an employment lawyer. I've been licensed in California since 2003. 3 years ago though, Andrew, I decided that I was going to start my own business because I really wanted to help companies proactively create better workplaces and cultures rather than coming in after the lawsuit was filed.
Yep.
So that I've been doing that for 3 years. And then, like I said, recently, I just accepted a position of being a chief culture officer for a venture studio called Nobody Studios.
Oh, really cool. For those who are wondering how we met and why I was so anxious to get my guest on the show, I was alerted to a TED talk where she talked about bias and how it affected her life. But above that, when I started to look into the person, one of the things that I'm always fascinated with in businesses is how they always wait for the proverbial stuff to hit the fan before they deal with toxic workplace environments. And to find someone with a legal background who's devoted themselves to proactively making the workplace the right place just really got my interest going to get to know the person. So it was a kind of a combination of both of those things. So let's start a little bit with how we're able now, using services like yours that are so valuable, to help companies deal with their workforce before they have to deal with EEOC bias and all those other things that can destroy the workplace.
Yeah, and that's really what it's all about. You know, when I was doing the litigation side of working with organizations, what I saw was, you know, there was just diversity within these cultures. And when I talk about diversity, I just mean that we're all different from each other. And so a lot of the times, these differences inherent when we put a bunch of people together that are different from each other, there are going to be some challenges. We know that it's where we are. We have diversity with just last year of globalization, with people expected to stay at work, you know, 5 generations now are going to be working together. There are going to be all kinds of different bias issues that are going to come up when we're working together. But as an attorney, what I saw was we weren't properly empowering people on how to react or how to respond in these situations. So these differences that we all have between us create certain challenges. So what I mm-hmm. do right now is I work with companies to say, let's train all of your employees. Let's educate them. Let's make them understand that they are a part of the solution because your culture is made up of your people. Mm-hmm. So your people need to know when they are dealing with people that are different than us and there's a misunderstanding or there is a microaggression that might result, how do they respond in that situation? So most of the trainings that I do with companies have a really strong focus on bystander intervention because it's literally the people that are watching this behavior going on. They need to be the ones to step up and address those situations, not the person that's being harmed.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's go back for a second to this concept of difference, because I come from a very different mindset in that I've worked in the global market and I have a theory about people who are successful in global trade. There's difference people and there's similarity people. Just to give you the quick view of it, similarity person gets off the plane in Mumbai mm-hmm. and there's an odd odor in the air from this, whatever it is. and they're kind of hungry and immediately thinking, I sure hope I can find a McDonald's, I can get a burger. The difference person gets off the plane and goes, wow, this is a different smell. There's different people, different look, and they recognize everything that's different and want to try something new. So when you go to folks that do global marketing, those difference people recognize that every different thing that they learn about makes them better at their job.
Yes.
And similarity people, they're, I can't wait to get out of here. Exactly. So in the workplace, when you can start identifying those people, not in the marketing and not in the sales team, but throughout the organization, what are some ways that we can get the similarity people that are always that resistant to change, resistant to the communication? What can we do to get those people together to start to sort of meld and learn from each other?
Yeah, and education is the number one component, right? It's about self-awareness. And if we haven't been exposed to differences in culture, differences in language, differences in food, as you call it, the differences, if we haven't been exposed to that, we are going to make judgments about people that are different than us. It could be positive judgments or negative judgments. Usually when you're dealing with people that are different than you, you know, we're just hardwired. I mean, mm-hmm. If you think about babies, for example, right? You hand the baby to somebody that they don't recognize, what do? They start screaming at the top of their lungs, right? Because now they don't recognize the space. We are from very young, when we have this affinity mm-hmm. towards people that look like us, that think like us, that talk like us. So what we need to do in the workforce then is educate people, empower them to do the work themselves, to learn about and understand that, look, my views, my opinions, my beliefs are based on what I've gone through in my life. That doesn't mean it discounts what anybody else has gone through in their lives. So I think for a long time, Andrew, we have created these cultures where it's like, we're going to tolerate each other.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to tolerate one another. And I really am on the other side trying to get people to the point of, we're not going to just tolerate each other. We want to understand each other and mm-hmm. get to know each other, because how can we be part of a team? How can we be productive? How can we be successful? How can we reap all of the benefits of diversity until we actually understand each other and connect with one another, right? So that's what this work is about.
Is there merit in asking employees to do things that are outside their comfort zone for the purpose of learning? Like, for example, I've done this, probably shouldn't have, but I've taken a sales team out for lunch and said to the salespeople, you can't order from the menu. You have to ask the waiter to choose something for you, unless you have a dietary restriction, just so that something that they would never have tried
mm-hmm.
comes on their plate. Are those things legal in and ethical to do in the workplace, or in today's environment, are you looking for trouble?
No, I think it just depends on who you're dealing with, right? There's no one answer to that question. If you've got a group of people that you're very comfortable with and they trust you, there's psychological safety there to say, I appreciate that suggestion, Andrew, but not today. I'm going to order what I want to do. If there's that comfort level there's that trust there, mm-hmm. sure. But I think it's very important that we meet people where they are in this journey. And mm-hmm. a lot of what I'm seeing is people trying to hammer things down each other's throats to say, yeah. I want you to go from, I could barely tolerate you, to now let's give each other hugs and kisses and pretend like we love each other every day. Well, that's not going to work, mm-hmm. right? So it's about, how do we engage? How do we motivate people to want to do that themselves? And so that's a really good reason why I do the work that I do from a civility standpoint,
mm-hmm.
is I'm trying to help, you know, help to control the behavior, because we can't change everybody's perspectives. We can't say, I want you to think this way. I mean, I'd love to say, I wish I could have that superpower, right? Then I would say, okay, sure. Everybody, just dignity and respect for everybody and we'd be fine. But we can't do that. But what we can do is we can set clearer boundaries on what is acceptable, what is not acceptable in the workplace. And as people change their behavior,
mm-hmm.
that's going to hopefully change their mindset, right? And they'll start opening up as they realize, oh, okay, this, now it's more clear. The problem is, for many organizations, it hasn't been clear.
Yeah.
Or a lot of behavior, you know, has been going on. It's become normal, where now people just think that's normal for this culture, right?
Yep. You know, in you don't know this, but early in my career, I my undergrad work was in international trade, And then because all the MBAs I knew were unemployed, I went back to school and got a master's and worked as a therapist for a number of years while I was developing my business practice. And the key that was the most successful thought in my head every time I would meet someone new, and it becomes part of the theoretical marketing that we do, is meeting people at their model of the world and then bringing them towards a place of a better functionality, better in terms of their ability to do what their life requires them to do or their job.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of, I just wonder in terms of techniques, if people are listening, and what are just some simple things that they can do with their team to start to not run away from difference, but start to enjoy and learn from it? What are some of the things that you suggest companies do?
Well, yeah, and I'm happy to share some strategies. But what I will point out is that it is a different time now, right? When you've got people working from home, you've got to use different techniques. It takes longer to build trust virtually, mm-hmm. especially if you've got somebody new coming on the team. And let's say we've worked together, so we already have that in-person connection, but now you've got somebody coming in that hasn't established that. So there's a lot of different factors now that we have to take into consideration mm-hmm. as we're thinking about how do we build connection. But it really boils down to, one, helping people understand what their own biases are, right? Mm-hmm. So based on our own upbringing, based on our own worldviews we've been exposed to, we have our own hidden beliefs. And so I started doing training on unconscious bias several years ago. And what I started to notice in my trainings, and that sort of led to why I did the TEDx talk in the first place, was because when I would do the training, the minute I would say the word bias, people's facial expressions would change. Yeah. Body language would change. It would just disconnect immediately. And I'm like,
yeah,
why is this happening? Because I'm just talking about something that's normal. If you have a brain, you have bias. So why are people disconnecting? And so what I started doing in my trainings is I started replacing the word bias. So instead of saying unconscious bias, I started saying unconscious beliefs, right? And so just that change of word. Now, all of a sudden, people were paying attention. They wanted to learn about their own unconscious beliefs. And that's the first step, is awareness. So if anybody is listening to this or watching this, my advice would be take time to understand what your own hidden beliefs or preconceived notions are. It's normal. This last year especially has made it seem like bias is just this bad thing. Bias in and of itself could be negative or positive. And in fact, I'm starting to reframe my conversation now. Instead of saying focusing on microaggressions, which are very important and we need to do the work, I'm starting to change that conversation to say, let's focus on micro affirmations, because bias could be positive, right? And so let's start talking more about when you have a positive bias towards somebody. So for example, I see someone that looks like my son, who's the center of my universe. If I see somebody that looks like my son, I am automatically going to have a positive feeling towards that person. And without knowing it, then unconsciously, I'm going to do, maybe I might smile at them more. Maybe my tone might be friendlier towards them. Maybe I might give them a little more leeway than other people because I've got this positive feeling towards that person. So people might ask then, why is that a bad thing if you're doing good things for them? Well, what are the rest of the people on my team seeing? Mm-hmm. They're seeing, and this is all happening, by the way, micro affirmations happen without even the person knowing it. Mm-hmm. So unintentionally now you are excluding the rest of your team,
yep.
right? And so the first step is to learn about your own hidden beliefs or biases. And then once you do that, then you can implement strategies like the ones I talked about in my talk to help you mitigate those situations. It's not about getting rid of them. They're part of who we are because of what we've gone through, but it's about learning what they are and figuring out what you can do about them.
It's really, really interesting. One of the things that I started to do years ago, and we all want to believe that we don't have biases, and I'm sure that we all do, whether we like it or not. Mm-hmm. When I read resumes, I always have someone cut off the header, not mm-hmm. just the name of the person, but even the neighborhood and address, because I don't want to know. And then we code the resumes. Of course, you know, you go through and you can see, like, for example, you'll find out it's a female because they'll put in there that they were part of the women's auxiliary or you know, something like that. But I do everything I can to look at the facts without, and I really don't believe that I have a bias that would matter if I saw a name, but at the same time, I don't want to take that risk.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so, not about believing it, and that's the whole thing. It's not about when you end up doing this work, what you find out is that your unconscious beliefs are actually the opposite of what you believe. Yeah. And so doing this work is important because you might sit here and say, I don't believe that. But if something happened to you, so for example, I was harassed and bullied when I was younger by Italian kids in my school.
Sure.
So now if I was a hiring manager and an Italian person walked in, I believe I should not discriminate. I'm out there advocating for that, right?
Yep, yep.
But because of what I've gone through, that is in my hardwiring up here. And so I can't control, it happens in the blink of an eye. I might just throw away that resume. And and what you're doing is fantastic. And I want to just give you a shout out. Yes, thank you for doing that. Because one of the videos I use in my training, I don't know if you've seen this, but it's on YouTube. It's an individual named Jose Zamora.
I actually did see that.
Yeah. So he applied to all of these jobs. And then all of a sudden he realized, he's like, why isn't anybody calling me back? Why am I not getting any callbacks? So all he did was, he took out the S from his name. So he changed it to Joe Zamora and sent it to the same resume, same employers, and all of a sudden started getting all of these calls back.
There's a study, I want to say it was Boston University. I have to go back and look, where they sent identical resumes with names that we would consider to be like urban names. So there was like a Leticia and a Lucy. And there was a Shaniqua and a Shane. And they sent the resumes to similar companies, and the results were undeniable.
Yeah.
That the first round of interviews were because of the names that people had those biases. And it's funny, one of the other things I kind of want to touch on. I'm fascinated, especially in our culture here in the US, how we take a word that has meaning and then we turn it into something else. And the one right now that's the buzzword of the day is privilege. Mm. And there are true, for example, white privilege in the society. But then all of a sudden we start lumping so many things into it that the word becomes a buzzword, and then it becomes what it wasn't meant to be. I'm curious how often you're seeing that happening in the workplaces that you work with.
It's happening all the time. I mean, that's the same thing with the word bias. It's changed its meaning. Privilege is a good one. Microaggressions is another one that people are saying. We shouldn't be BIPOC. It's happening literally every day. There's a new word. And in fact, one of my colleagues and I, we were talking on the phone the other day, first conversation with her, but we belong to a kind of a networking group together. And we're doing a presentation on what are like 10 words in 2021 that you need to be careful about using because the language has changed so much. But I think that's good news. I really look at that as a positive thing, is that we've allowed these words and these behaviors to continue for so long that now people are saying, no, that's actually not. We don't want to lump all these people into that category. It's not fair. Now we're doing the same thing back to other people. We really want to just stick to treating people as individuals and validating their own life experiences and journeys. And that's why I love what I'm seeing a lot of right now is people sharing their stories and talking about what they've gone through. And as more and more people do that, we start to see how unique and beautiful we each are. And we start to connect with one another rather than, okay, you're just another brown attorney that, you know, it's like, no, wait, I've got my own story that I'm bringing to the table and I want to be treated in as an individual. Right. So,
yeah, it's funny. I've been in meetings where there's like one African-American guy in the room and one Asian fellow in the room. And as soon as there's a question about the Black community, so what do you think, Bob? And as if other people in the room don't have opinions, it's after a while, it becomes extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But that's my problem. Not, you know, it's one of those things. It's kind of like, I've been in situations, even on like LinkedIn, where somebody has just been really inappropriate in what they've said to a woman on LinkedIn. And my response back is, you know, I don't speak for other women. As a guy, I'm offended by what you just said to that person. And I don't think most people have sort of that, you know, I'm not coming in as Superman to rescue someone. I'm letting you know that what you did made me uncomfortable. And I think it's a different approach than most. And you know, it's the same. I notice on your name, you include your pronouns. I choose not to. And it isn't because I have a bias. As a matter of fact, my life is full of folks that that go by different pronouns than the biology would say. But in my case, I recognize that if I put that after my name, many of the clients that I work with would have a bias against me for using it. And I've had the conversation with my gay friends and people in my life that are trans and otherwise, and they understand it. Yeah. But when I talk to someone who has their pronouns and isn't in that group of people, they give me grief saying that I'm being biased against those folks. And I say, well, you know, in reality, this is about choice. And I recognize that there are people of backgrounds within companies that I do business with that would look at it and go, oh, you're one of those, and not want to do business.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, the just from a topical thing, how often are you seeing issues with companies with this whole pronoun situation, as I call it?
Yeah, I mean it's a big issue. You know, I mean, I think that it's just as equivalent to somebody mispronouncing my name right after I tell them. I mean, it's a different name. I never get offended if somebody mispronounces my name. First time, that's why whenever I answer the telephone right away, I'll say my name first, to, you know, kind of put them out of their misery of trying to figure out like how to say it, right?
Yeah.
But I also, you know, if I'm working with somebody and I'm seeing them all the time and we're interacting and they still keep butchering my name, after the second or third time, I might say it's actually Sejal. And then I will keep saying it until they get it, right? And then most people will get it by the third or fourth time, right? But but I think it's important because like the reason why I put those pronouns is because I want to send a very clear and strong message that I'm inclusive, that I welcome people regardless, and for people to feel comfortable with who they are. And so I don't want to, and if people are biased against me and they don't want to do business with me because I do that to show my allyship and my inclusion, then they probably need to go somewhere else, because then I'm not the right person for their business.
I get that.
But I wanted to send a very like clear message. Same thing with like when the whole Black Lives Matter companies were, you know, tiptoeing around, should we issue a statement? Should we not issue a statement? I put it on LinkedIn front and center saying, I support Black Lives Matter. Yep. And if that makes you uncomfortable and you don't want me to bring me into your company, then I can refer you to 20 other people. And I wish you the best of luck. But here's who I am and what I support, right?
Yep. And I feel the same way about it. And it's interesting too, because there's an interest, you know, if you look at the arc of that, there's those of us that are truly allies to Black Lives Matter, to the LGBT community, all of that stuff. And then there's the folks who take it too far. Like, for example, if I was at a Black Lives Matter rally supporting people and being there to show my presence, I think it's a powerful thing to do. The moment I reach out and grab the megaphone and start my chants for a message that isn't mine, then it crosses that line into appropriation as opposed to appreciation.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it is, it's a challenging situation, and we navigate out. You know, I had somebody call me out the other day on some of the stuff that I'm doing. And I say, look, whatever I talk about comes from my experience, what I've seen in my life. I am not representing the entire, you know, Indian community. I'm not speaking for all South Asians. I'm speaking based on my, but it is. And I even made this comment to somebody the other day, and I go, it's really sad when we're all trying to move the needle in the right direction and people start finger pointing and blaming each other. It's like, let's put that ego stuff away. Let's really focus on the goal, and let's everybody join hands and let's start moving. We can come at it from a lot of different angles, but there's work that needs to get done, and let's not waste time blaming each other for things that we didn't create, right?
Yeah. I really think the future has to be when people step out of their comfort zone for the first time and gain a super positive experience out of doing that is when the change really happens.
That's true.
And it's so difficult for people to recognize that as we sit around trying to get our children for the first time ever to just taste the broccoli, just touch your tongue to it, please.
Yeah. Totally. It's been, positive psychology has been around forever, right? Like that's what's going to inspire people to do things, to step out of their comfort zone. I mean, that's what we're hardwired, right? We want to stay comfortable. We don't want to put ourselves out of the zone. And so I like what you said earlier about finding ways as a leader to be a good role model, to try to help push those boundaries a little bit in a safe way, because we know that once people do it, they're going to see a different perspective, right? Yeah. And they're going to open up a little bit more.
Yeah. And in you know, in the marketing world, they, even in an agency situation, which we're not, we're a consulting company, but in the agency environment, you've got your graphics guys, you got your web guys, you've got, and they all sort of have their own silo. And when communications break down in those agencies, what people miss out is how to put these people that have conflict together on the same project with a similar goal. So that the guy who does the actual web design can see what the graphic person goes through and work on those things together. Yes. It'll slow the process down on the one project, but grow them for future projects and the ability to work as a team.
Yeah, collaboration, right? We've gone to a competitive culture mindset. We've been in that zone. I've been there and I was like, get me out of there. But now we're moving into a collaborative. And, you know, I've been on my own since 2017. And I've had more rich collaborations with people being on my own than I ever did working for law firms or organizations, right? So that says that we're starving for collaboration, for support, connection with the people that we work with.
Yeah, there seems to be a trend among the majority, although the minority seems to be louder, where people are starting to recognize again. Earlier in the conversation, as you know, back when I was a kid in school, we didn't have bias against all the kids that came from other countries at that time. We didn't know we were supposed to. So there was a girl I went to high school with. I didn't even realize she was from India until a reunion when I saw a picture of a wedding and she was wearing Indian attire. I was like, that never even struck me that she was from there. So there seems to be a move back to where people are hopefully starting to do, and how we encourage everyone in our lives to embrace difference and learn from it is probably the key to how we all find a better future for our next generation.
I think so. I believe so. That's why I got up on a stage and to tell the world my story, say, let's start with ourselves and we can do this. You know, I wouldn't be out there preaching this stuff if I didn't think that it could truly make a difference.
That's fantastic. We're running near the end. I always ask my guest, is there something that I didn't ask you about yourself or your work that I should have, that the audience should know about?
I'm just going to add that I think, again, do the work on how you can improve yourself. You know, I would say in this one instance, be selfish. Make time to understand your own unconscious biases. If we all do that, then collectively we can all create a bigger impact together.
So in other words, in the crass world, learn how to smell your own.
Yes. Perfect.
Yeah, I couldn't resist. So how can people find you? I know I'm going to put the links in all the right places, but what are some places that people can learn more about you and what you do?
Yeah, the only social media platform I'm really active on is LinkedIn. So if you're on LinkedIn, follow me on there. Andrew, as you know, I seek out trustworthy, reliable resources that help create better workplace cultures and just better human beings in general. And I'm always posting that stuff on LinkedIn. And then the only other place would be my website, which you'll put the link in there. So.
Yep, I will. You know, it's funny. I did an exercise because I was recognizing that my feed on LinkedIn was just full of garbage. People with empty platitudes and affirmations and stuff that didn't have any bearing on me or pitches for things I wasn't interested in. I went through and pruned all of the LinkedIn connections that really weren't in my network because I don't care how many connections I have. And what it did is it allowed me to see stuff that was really valuable. And a lot of what you post and folks who are watching connect or follow because there's just great stuff coming out that will help you. As opposed to just sort of make you wonder why someone posted it, which seems to be a trend. So I highly recommend it. So thank you so much for coming on today. I know people are going to really enjoy this episode.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fantastic. And for those of you at home on your treadmills and your hot tubs out at the bar, listening to us in the earplug, we appreciate you joining the FangledCast today. You certainly can subscribe if you just click right down here and you'll be able to catch the future episodes. Tell an old person, so since you know they don't know what a podcast is, maybe send them a fax or a telex. And that's my bias. So we will see you all on the next episode of the FangleCast. Thanks so much for coming.
Brought to you by Fangle Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.